Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Exhausted by the labor of childbirth, Yashoda was overwhelmed with sleep and unable to understand what kind of child had been born to her. Interesting. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Nanda Maharaj and Vasudev were intimate friends, and so were their wives, Yashoda and Devaki. Although their names were different, they were practically non-different personalities. The only difference is that Devaki was able to understand that the Supreme Personality of God had been born to her and had now changed into Krishna. Whereas Yashoda was not able to understand what kind of child had been born to her. So, presumably, of course, Devaki was much more realized, huh? She knew that her son was God, right? At least Narayan. But Yashoda was in the darkness. She didn't know. Maybe from the material point of view, one may think like that. Oh, Devaki is much more realized, much more in knowledge. Maybe. But here Prabhupada writes, Yashoda was such an advanced devotee that she never regarded Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but simply loved him. Well, the second part is the qualification. The first part, people may also not accept Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead, but that doesn't make them advanced devotees. It's qualified by the second part of the sentence. But simply, she loved him as her own child. She had unflinching love for Krishna. Nothing else. Absolutely nothing else mattered. No considerations of any other kind. Just flowing, spontaneous love for Krishna in the mood of a vatsalya or motherly affection. Devaki, however, knew from the very beginning that although Krishna was her son, he was the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Imagine what it's like, you know, it's a situation where maybe, in our case, maybe a little different, but in a case where somebody is a very notorious, well-known person in the material world, maybe the prime minister or some very famous person. Of course, the mother may be very proud of that, but her prominent relationship with her son is not necessarily as the president. When the man, grown-up man, now the prime minister or president, comes home, whoever it may be, Mr. Cameron or Mr. Obama, whoever it may be, comes home, if their mother's still alive, that is, to see the mother, how does the mother greet them? How does their mother greet them? Welcome, Mr. Prime Minister! Welcome home! Is it like that? Stand up and offer their respects to their son. Huh? Do they do like that? What do they do? Give him a kiss on the cheek. Hello, darling. Welcome home, whatever it is. I don't know what they call their sons. And that maybe they give him a slap on the cheek if they came late or something like that. You know, it's completely intimate, isn't it? It's much more pleasing, you know, than this reverential thing. How's it going in Parliament today? What, you know, the mother may ask at some point of time, but it's not really it's not the significant point of their relationship. It's the loving affection which the mother relishes, and so does the son. Much more than, you know, being saluted, is he, or booed, or whatever they do these days when he enters into the Parliament House. But much more so than that. It's much deeper, because that's there in Krishna also. All the different relationships are there. They exist simultaneously. Unlike in the material world, where you can't really, I mean, it's hidden, you could say, within the person, it's within them, but you can't really manifest too much overlapping of relationships all at once in the material world. They don't work, you know. It simply doesn't work, you know. In a conjugal relationship of love, there's not much space for reverence. There's not much space for motherly affection or you know. Friendship may be there in a certain way, different to maybe, you know, pure sakuras, but it's there. And service may be there in a sense of wanting to serve the other person. But the essential feature is that conjugal love, the spontaneous loving affection towards each other in that mood of without any other considerations. It's a very deep one because everything's there in Krishna. In the material world, we only can, generally speaking, manifest one thing at a time, or maybe a bit of a mixture of the others. And we have to dress up. It's like, unlike Krishna, he can enjoy all the rasas, reverence, whether it's Aishvarya Bhav or Madhurya Bhav. He can enjoy the relationships with all of his devotees. Reciprocation is the key point here. Reciprocating with the level of maturity or the emotion, the desire of all of his devotees. That he reciprocates with his devotees according to our surrender. So that's another thing in our present situation. But even on the transcendental platform it's there, and Krishna expands in so many ways to expand this pleasure, potency, this enjoying relationship with his unlimited devotees. And they all go on simultaneously. Whereas in this material world, you can't really be in the parliament house and at the same time be having a conjugal relationship with your girlfriend or being in the pub having a drink with your mates, you know, all at the same time. It doesn't quite work, does it? Yeah. It shouldn't. Maybe it does sometimes happen, but it doesn't work like that, you know, that you're drunk and, you know, you're drinking away with your mates, you know, having a punch up or something. And your girlfriend comes in, you start having it just doesn't work like that. Or even if you're on a sports ground or something, you can only do one thing. You know? We're limited in this material because it's not the full thing, so to speak. It's only like a reflection. But in the spiritual world, everything is going on. Krishna, everything is an expansion for his pleasure, whether it's his relationship with Mother Yasoda, with Devaki, whatever. He's reciprocating with the particular devotees in so many wonderful ways, which we can hear about. And the effect of hearing these pastimes, of course, it's giving us something to think about, something to talk about. Prabhupada said that's one of the reasons Krishna manifests his pastimes in this world, so that we've got something to talk about. Otherwise, what will we talk about? Even we've got this, we can still say, what do we talk about? It's not always Krishna Katha. I can just say, I'm very happy to see Kishore Prabhu here today because he was one of the first devotees who really inspired me in this regard. So I never forget that moment. He probably can't remember. He was preaching with Tribhuvanath up in Edinburgh, 1971 or two. And he came down to Soho, Bury Place in those days. And I was sat there, and I was a fairly newbie and a greenhorn. And I was sat in the prasadam room, and a very small little tiny room. And all of a sudden, these two beaming, bright-faced, beaming personalities entered into the room. I thought, God, who are these people? It was Kishore and Tribhuvanath. You may not want to but it was Kish. And he immediately started talking. I can't remember exactly, but he immediately started talking. So one of the pastimes had a Krishna book right in the middle of the prasadam room. It was so amazing. And it was the mood, you know. And that's what I remember. Maybe other things were there, but I remember when it was like that. And you go in the kitchen and you'll be, you know, cutting up the potatoes, if you had any, if you were lucky that day, we had some potatoes. You're doing some kind of service in the kitchen, washing the pots or something or another. And the devotee, usually he's a senior devotee, maybe in the movement 3 or 4 months, was telling some story that he just heard or read from the Krishna book. Because we never had books. There's only like one of each book in the whole temple. And there weren't many books anyway. There was only the Bhagavatam was only first canto and a few little paperback versions of the second canto and, you know, one or two other books, Bhagavad Gita, one or two copies, Krishna book, one copy, like that. You know, you had to sit down and hear it. You never could. There was no chance much of the time for reading, at least when I joined. And you had to hear. So we had 5 or 6 classes a day, every day, everybody, every day, hearing from all these different books. It was amazing, absolutely amazing. And you really had to hear it because you know, it's not like, what was that again? Or you go back. You had to listen very carefully. So then devotees will repeat this. This is the wonderful thing. This is the process of devotional service. Hearing these passages, repeating them, we become purified. We also have to look on how this is relevant in our particular situation. So let's read on a little bit more from the purport here. He was the Supreme Person. In Vrindavan, no one regarded Krishna as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. When something very wonderful happened because of Krishna's activities, the inhabitants of Vrindavan, the coward men, the coward boys, Nanda Maharaj, Yashoda, and the others, were surprised. But they never considered their son, Krishna, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. They always thought it was due to something else, you know, something very indescribable, mystical, maybe the demigods or whatever. Maybe they'd done something very pious in their last life. Always something else. They couldn't get around it, you know. That Krishna is the Supreme Personality and everything's going on under his direction. Not a blade of grass moves without his will. They couldn't, it's not just not their mood. They just think, oh, Krishna's in danger. We've got to protect him. What are we going to do? You know, always something going on. When Nanda, we do get to him. But they never again. Sometimes they suggested that some great demigod had appeared there as Krishna. They thought maybe he is a demigod. In such an exalted status of devotional service, a devotee forgets the position of Krishna and intensely loves the Supreme Personality of God without understanding his position. This is called Kevala Bhakti and is distinct from the stages of Jnana and Gyanamayi Bhakti. People are still mixed with some reverence, seeing Krishna, trying to understand his opulences, his power, and so on and so forth, trying to measure him in one sense. Even Uddhava said, although he is known as a very, very close friend of Krishna, no doubt, Krishna treated, but in order for him to really understand Kevala Bhakti, pure devotional service, Krishna sent Uddhava to Vrindavan. He didn't really understand it. His devotion to Krishna, Baba says, was mixed with some jnana, some, you know, understanding of the opulences, you could say, of the Lord in that sense, and not understanding the most intimate aspect. And when he went there and he had the association of the gopis and Radharani and the other residents of Vrindavan, then he was able to understand what is really the most intimate, the highest form of purity. He thought I'm very dear to Krishna. Now I understand that really I'm not anywhere near the same platform as these residents of Vrindavan. And thus, he couldn't experience it. Just like Lakshmi, she wanted to enter into these pastimes also. But she couldn't enter in because she can't get rid of her, you can say, her mood, her nature. It wouldn't go, her nature is reverential. Although she could appreciate this as the highest form of loving exchange, she couldn't enter in as long as she maintained that somewhat degree of reverence, or in the case of Uddhava, a little bit of jnana. Little mixed. We're all mixed right now with karma or jnana or whatever it may be. And he prayed that he would, you know, in his next lifetime, because he, in that form, it said he couldn't take the dust of Radharani or the gopis' lotus feet, which is the secret. To serve the intimate associates of Vrindavan is the secret of bringing, has to be eligible to please Krishna. So in that lifetime, he wasn't really able to do it. So he prayed that he may be born again as a blade of grass in Vrindavan, so that he would be trampled under the feet of the gopis and the residents of Vrindavan. That way he felt he might be able to taste the nectar of pure love of God without any other influence of any other reverence or any other motivation other than simply to please Krishna only. Who cares if he's God or not? I just love him. I just want to satisfy Krishna. This is the mood. Even if they have this, who cares? Even if they saw Vaikuntha, you know, the gopas, they had some vision of it. They thought, what is a strange place? What is this, you know? They weren't at home there. You know, everyone's worshipping Krishna with reverence. They're not at home in that situation. It's kind of unnatural. It's like the mother in Houses of Parliament or something. It's kind of unnatural for her, you know? It's just not natural. Just like when Krishna, after the pastime of Lord Brahma, who manifests, of course, very much this awe and reverence mood towards Krishna, after he's stolen away the calves and the cowherd boys, or tried to, and And consequently, of course, he learned his lesson and so on and so forth. And the same thing with Indra. He also tried to manifest his power, comparing it with Krishna, thinking he could devastate Vrindavan with this so-called power, which was only nothing but another expansion of Krishna's opulences manifesting through him. But he thought it was his. This is called pride, when we think that which belongs to Krishna is ours. And so he was like that. When he learned his lesson, eventually he went with Sarabi, of course, to Vrindavan to beg for forgiveness. He was in a real bad shape. First he went to Lord Brahma, on the advice of Brihaspati, his spiritual master. You better do something about this. You're already in trouble, boy. I think you should go to Lord Brahma. I think he had a bit of a problem similar to yours not long ago. He might be able to help you. So he went to Lord Brahma, and Lord Brahma said, well, yes, what you say is true, but, you know, I just stole away a few calves and coward boys. You tried to kill them all. There's a little bit of difference. He said, you better ask Sarabi to go with you, otherwise there's not much hope. So he took Sarabi with him. And because of the mother, Sarabi, of course, Krishna was naturally, give audience. And eventually, of course, forgave Indra and so on and so forth. And then Indra and all the demigods appeared. And there they go into Kund. They perform this incredible puja to Krishna. All of, huge gold, everything was pure gold and, valuable items, offering ghee wicks and chamaras, and everything was so valuable up and big. They were all big demigods and everything. And this is all not seen by the other residents of Vrindavan, Krishna, because it's just not their mood. He kind of hid this. Yogamaya kept them out of the picture. So this went on and on and on. And it said that after a while, Krishna was getting really bored. And he said, why don't they hurry up with all these rituals and get on with it so I can get on with my real business? It's so boring after a while, This thing, that thing, blah, blah, blah. The people who are very much in the mood of reverence and awe and gyan, these things are like, this is it, They're so attached to the process like this. And it's important for people like that. And that's why we have so many rules and regulations. We have to do this because we're not on that spontaneous platform. We're still attached to karma. Maybe we got a bit of gyan mixed in there. We're still attached. We're still conditioned souls. So we have to be, let's say, purified of the mixture by following somebody who is pure. In the nectar of instruction, we see that when it says there, some devotees jump the gun. They think they can go straight into the deep end, but they just drown. You don't. You have to go through the step-by-step procedure. You have to reside on the banks of Radhakund, and there you have to associate with and serve, somebody who's a ragatmika, an eternal associate of the Lord, this and that. This is the goal. Yes, but that's only when one is on that platform. Otherwise, one gets burned. It's like if you put your finger in fire, what happens? What happens? Yeah, you get burned. Because to enter a fire, you have to be fire. You have to come to that platform. Step-by-step nectar of instruction gives us the step-by-step guidelines. Prabhupada is emphasizing how we should go through the various stages. Nonetheless, even in our stage of vaidhi, which means basically regulations, vaidhi, sadhana, practice, bhakti, devotion, we are in a very fortunate position because we are following a resident of Vrindavan, a ragatmika. Even though he's teaching us, you could say, the basics of vaidhi bhakti, but he himself is an eternal associate of the Lord. In Ragatmaka, one of the Lord's confidential associates who comes into this world to try to help release or help us to return or to enter into that transcendental place where Krishna's pleasure is increased unendingly. Their whole purpose is to please Krishna by reconnecting us with Krishna. And the process is from the conditioned soul. It's like a sleeping man has to be woken up first before they can engage in actual activities of, a conscious nature, or, awakened nature. So similarly, the spiritual master or the pure devotee comes into this world to wake us up. Wake us up. You've got to wake up first. Otherwise, it's just another aspect of the dream. It's not, we've got to wake up. So the pure, through Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, we can, following those who are awake, that is, we can wake up. Wake up! Anyone sleeping back there? Right, where's that water pistol? Did you bring the water pistol? There was a time, right, son? I'd have a wonder where he stood at the back with a water pistol, looking. Double. It's kind of like that, but not exactly like that. You know, we've got to practically apply the process. It's not like someone's going to force it upon us. A little force may be there sometimes, but ultimately it's got to come from our heart. You know, Krishna doesn't force us to go back to Godhead. He doesn't force us to love him. Love is not force. I order you to love me. I order you to love me. Can you do that? You can say it, but will it work? Probably not. Maybe you've put on some show just to save your skin, but nothing more than that. It's not really love. Well, how much are you going to pay me for it? Or maybe some condition involved. There's devotional services sometimes like that now, isn't it? Well, how much are you going to pay me for it, you know? What am I going to get out of this? What is it we're supposed to get out of? Devotional service is meant to get us out of the material world, not that we get something out of devotional service. You know, we have it the wrong way around sometimes. Anyway, what to do? That's the conditional nature. Anyway, I'm going to read a few things. You know, time goes rather quickly here at Bhaktivedanta Manor. What's going on? I thought this was a spiritual world. Why is it moving so fast? It's already 8:15 here. Good grief. Okay, just something came to mind, and this is from the Adi Leela, Chaitanya Charitamrita. It's really wonderful. We'd like to go on a lot longer. We haven't got time. This is from the... we're starting with the fourth chapter, okay? I don't know how long we're going to go. Let's have a look. This is text number... I'll just give a little idea. This is text number 13, pastimes. At that time, therefore, Lord Vishnu is present in the body of Lord Krishna, and Lord Krishna kills the demons through him. So it's an interesting pastime. I'll just recap. You already heard a bit of it. Prabhupada did describe it maybe 10 verses earlier. When Devaki gave birth to Vasudev Krishna, and when Vasudev took that baby across the river Yamuna and placed him into the cot, onto the bed of Mother Yasoda, who, as we see today, was not aware of exactly who was born of her. Somehow or another, by the great arrangement of Yoga Maya, this whole thing was mystically covered over. So Mother Yasoda was, the hero said, due to childbirth, labor. She was fast asleep. She was exhausted. She didn't know what was going on. So Vasudev took the boy, baby boy, Vasudev Krishna, placed him on the bed and picked up the baby girl and took the girl back, as we've heard. Meanwhile, of course, the whole pastime there took place in Mathura. That's another issue. That baby girl born of Yasoda is Yogamaya. Was Yogamaya. And the one taken by Vasudev to Mathura was Mahamaya. It's nothing but another form of Yogamaya. This is explained by Srinath Chakravarti Thakur, describes this in the same purport Prabhupada quotes there, that another interesting feature is that two children were born immediately or simultaneously of Mother Yasoda. She had a boy and a girl, unknown to her and unknown to anyone else. This is revealed by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, as also explained in the Hari Vamsa commentary on these pastimes. And Prabhupada mentions it in a few verses before and in the next chapter, that actually Yasoda had two children, but this was mystical. So he took the girl who remained, in another way, she was already there as Yogamaya in Vrindavan, but the one taken by Vasudev manifested, as we know, when Kamsa tried to kill her, as Yoga, as Mahamaya, Durga Devi. And another daughter was born of Vasudev, sometimes difference of opinion, maybe different millenniums. Prabhupada says another daughter of Vasudev and Devaki was Subhadra. But in the Mahabharata and in the Hari Vamsa, it says, and Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur also says, that daughter Subhadra was born of Rohini and Vasudev. So there are three. They're all expansions of the same. As Krishna expands himself for different pastimes, his internal potency also expands in different ways to reciprocate accordingly with different people in different situations. Whether it's Kamsa, who's obviously negative, so Durga appears to him in a fearful form, or whether it's, whatever it is. Arjuna is another expansion of Krishna's opulences. So in that way, Krishna's internal potency also expands. There's some reciprocation there. Subhadra. But back to the situation. And then that Vasudev Krishna merged into the form of the Vrindavan Krishna, the Yasoda Krishna, Yasodananda. They merged, and here, as it states here, that through that body of Krishna, sometimes he kills demons, but it's the Vasudev Krishna who kills the demons, not the Vrindavan Krishna. He has no business killing demons. There are no demons in the spiritual world. Pastimes are there sometimes where they think there are demons, and they enjoy these pastimes. Variety of pastimes is there in Goloka Vrindavan, where it appears that Yoga Yoga Maya's arrangement is described that demons appear, but they're not really demons. They're just appearing as demons for the pastimes, that's all. And as soon as the pastime's finished, it's another interesting thing. Mother Yasoda here is completely, you know, they forget. They forget that the pastime ever occurred. And then again, they enjoy the same pastime. It's amazing. Even in this material, when kids, little kids, children, sometimes they forget. And they just do the same thing over and over and over again. And they're just enjoying it. You know, it's like fun. Like fun. It's there in the spiritual world. That forgetfulness is there. They're here forgetting that Krishna is God. Or they're also forgetting that pastime just occurred. And they're doing it again and enjoying it even more than they did last time. It's how Yoga Maya works. To increase the pleasure potency. That time, thus the killing of demons is secondary work. And now he speaks of the real reason. The Lord's desire to appear was born from two reasons. The Lord wanted to taste the sweet essence of the mellows of love of God. And he wanted to propagate devotional service to the world on the platform of spontaneous attraction. So he appears with his pure devotees to manifest these wonderful pastimes, to give others a chance to hear about them, become eligible through sadhana bhakti, to enter into that mood of relationship. That's his intention. That's preaching, to facilitate or to help us to become eligible to enter into the spiritual world. Thus he's known as supremely jubilant, as the most merciful of all. Krishna thought, all the universe is filled with a conception of my majesty. But love, weakened by that sense of majesty, does not satisfy me. If one regards me as the Supreme Lord and is himself as a subordinate, I do not become subservient to his love. Nor can it control me. That's basically all everyone's doing. I mean, of course, we're also doing. But with the understanding, by the grace of Srila Prabhupada, you know, that's the, let's say, the stage we have to worship or serve the Lord at. With the, maybe not, maybe that's our eternal desire, but ultimately is to awaken a more intimate relationship with the Lord, we could say, Raganuga Bhakti. But, and most people are just in this complete, this Aishwarya, this mood of reverential worship. God is my Father. Yeah, no, they don't even know that, but God is the Father figure, and we're the Son, which is true in one sense. Krishna himself says, I'm the sea-giving Father of all living entities. It's true. But that's not the full truth. The more intimate aspect of the Supreme Lord is that he enjoys this relationship of equality, or even the devotee becomes superior. Mother Yasoda is chastising Krishna in so many ways. Krishna is being controlled by their love. In whatever transcendental mellow my devotee worships me, I reciprocate with him. That is my natural behavior. He appears in that particular form to reciprocate whatever it is. In the material, what is death? Brother says he appears as death before the non-devotees. They're afraid of him in that form of death. He appears in so many ways, according to reciprocating, as the impersonal Brahman, whatever it is, according to the devotee or according to the individual jiva's relationship, what their desire, mood is, and so on. We've already quoted that verse from Bhagavad Gita, Yayatam Mampapachite. If one cherishes pure loving devotion to me, thinking of me as his son, his friend, or his beloved, regarding himself as great, and considering me his equal or inferior, I become subordinate to him. We shouldn't imitate this, by the way. Sometimes devotees may think of imitating this prematurely. This is something, as Prabhupada describes in the Nectar of Devotion, discussing Raganuga Bhakti, that these topics, although they can be heard, Prabhupada says, they're not to exactly be discussed with the idea that we can actually apply them or practically apply them in our lives. And Prabhupada is describing these particular pastimes of the residents of Vrindavan and their loving relationships with Krishna and so on. And he said, there Prabhupada describes that they develop themselves in due course of time. Once one is completely free to the effects of the three modes of nature and there is no more sex desire, then these things may be developed. And as and until that's the case, then we can hear them, as Prabhupada said, he's given us them in the Krishna book, Chaitanya Charitamrita and so on. We can hear about it, but to think I can enter into that, there was a time, I think it was 1975, there was the Gopi Bhava Club in Los Angeles, 75, 76, something like that. Something around about then. Prabhupada said this is the greatest threat to our movement. Devotees imitating these, one devotee was even trying to imitate being a peacock, pouncing around trying to make the sounds of a peacock and so on and so forth. Crazy things going on. You know, thinking this is not Raghunuga Bhakti. It's not what it means. You know, it's not a fancy dress show. Yeah, some kind of party where we put on some kind of imitation act or something. I'm Jesus Christ. I'm Bonaparte Napoleon or something. Everyone knows that these people are crazy. It's even crazier is that people think they're God. That's the most crazy thing of all. You know, somebody thinks, if somebody goes on the street now and dresses up like, you know, Winston Churchill or something and starts claiming, I'm Winston Churchill, just a cigar in their mouth and so many things. People think this guy's crazy, right? Complete nut. But when someone says, I'm God, oh, very good, very good. You're God too. Oh, even better. The most greatest madness. Absolute insanity. But Krishna still reciprocates with such, you know, entities, you could say, in different ways. We'll read on one or two more verses. Devotional service rendered to me by the living beings revives their eternal life. Oh, my dear damsels of Raj, your affection for me is your good fortune, for it is the only means by which you have obtained my favor. Mother sometimes binds me as her son. She nourishes and protects me, thinking me utterly helpless. My friends climb on my shoulders in pure friendship, saying, what kind of big man are you? You and I are equal, or I'm stronger than you. And we sometimes think like that. I don't need to worry about Maya. Huh? I'm strong enough. I don't need to worry about Maya. I won't get captured by Maya. Oh, why? Even Maya can capture us in a flash, in a moment. We're so, you know, let's say, vulnerable. If my beloved consort reproaches me in a sulky mood, that steals my mind from the reverent hymns of the Vedas. Taking these pure devotees with me, I shall descend and sport in various wonderful ways unknown even in Vaikuntha. I shall broadcast such pastimes by which even I am amazed. So Krishna comes along with his associates into this world to perform these, and that way facilitates the entry of others from different places, whether they're the demigods or whether they're the Shutidaras or whether they're the Municharis or whoever they may be, who are given the chance to enter in to these pastimes and to develop the mood of these confidential associates of the Lord. So if we follow in the mood, Lord Chaitanya, we don't have time to go on much more, but Lord Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has appeared in this world. Krishnadas Kaviraj Goswami describes how he's appeared in this world specifically to taste these wonderful pastimes. And to the highest extent, because as Krishna, there's one thing lacking, you know. When Krishna was in Dwarka one time, when Rukmini was crying, and he put her on his lap and he said to Rukmini, my darling, what is the problem? Why are you crying? Are you still remembering that time when I spoke harsh words to you? She said, no, my lord, that's not why I'm crying. And he said, why are you crying? She said, you cannot understand why I'm crying. What? What do you mean, I'm God? He didn't say that, but that was the mood. There's something I can't understand? How is that? You know, is there something Krishna can't understand? He said, yes, there is. That's that you can't understand. You have to take the mood of Radharani to understand this. You'll never understand it otherwise. He said, well, what is it? Tell me. I'm eager to know. What is it? He said, you do not know what it is like, the mood of your devotees, what they experience in your separation, the intensity of their emotions. You can never experience this. The love, the attraction which they have for you, the experience, what the qualities within you that they experience, and that loving exchange you cannot possibly understand, only if you take the mood of Radha. So he determinedly accepted this mood of Radharani and appeared in the form of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So with that in mind, to taste this highest nectar, the pleasure of the devotee, although it may appear not like that, but the pleasure of the devotee is far superior, in one sense, than the pleasure of Krishna. The devotee is relishing Krishna. Of course, Krishna may see it otherwise, but that's how it works. And when Krishna sees the devotee relishing pleasure, he relishes pleasure. When the devotee sees Krishna relishing pleasure, they relish more pleasure. This is simply thinking of the pleasure of the other person. That's called love, not one's own pleasure. It happens automatically. And for that purpose, Lord Chaitanya appeared to taste this loving or this Krishna praying in its highest form, as experienced by Srimati Radharani, and along with the congregational chanting of the holy names. The two go hand in hand. It's through the performance of congregational chanting that the awakening or the eligibility and thus consequently the awakening of this loving, affectionate attraction towards Krishna may take place, as demonstrated by the Lord. He said, along with his associates dancing and chanting, along with the Panchatattva and their pure devotees who appear in this world, they're not jivas of the normal kind, they're expansions of his internal potencies. And they perform this Sankirtan activity to make it easy for all the conditioned souls to enter into and experience these four loving rasas. Otherwise, it remains reverential only. You could say neutral. It's not even service. They may enter into service into Vaikuntha with that neutral kind of reverential mood, but not beyond that. So he's given, through the Sankirtan movement, the congregational chanting of the holy name, the opportunity, again, it's reciprocal, for all living entities to have this opportunity to actually enter into these most intimate loving relationships in the Goloka Vrindavan. Goloka Ara Prema Dana Harinama Sankirtan. The holy name has descended as the form of this Sankirtan movement. Krishna has descended in order to give us all a chance to enter into Goloka Vrindavan. He's given us that chance. So Lord Chaitanya preached this Sankirtan movement along with his associates, even to the untouchables, the most unqualified. Persons who have no eligibility, you could say, practically at all, only good fortune. He preached to the untouchables. And thus, he wove a wreath of the holy name and Krishna praying with which he garlanded the entire material world. So this Sankirtan movement is the actual manifestation or the process whereby the Lord appears in this world to give us a chance to understand, enter into, and relish, whether we want to or not, to relish these pastimes and to naturally share that with everybody else. Otherwise, everyone else is just bobbing around different modes of nature, different gyan and this, that, the other, karma and so on, trying to make it better all the time. But they have no access to the reality of actual pleasure. The actual reality of truth remains covered, as this Srimad Bhagavatam has appeared to deliver us from this, to distinguish clearly reality from illusion beyond the three modes of material nature. But most people have very little access. The Sankirtan movement is making that access available to everyone. And these wonderful, sweet pastimes. There's this very, almost parallel section in the third chapter of this Adilila also. The same thing is mentioned there by Krishnadas Kaviraj about the ultimate goal of the Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti. And how that Vaidhi Sadhana Bhakti, although we could say is reformatory, it's like in a prison house where there are many prisoners, which is more pleasing. They're both pleasing in one sense, but in the prison where the prisoners are becoming reformed or when the prisoners are outside actually doing something positive for the government or for their family or whatever it is. You see, obviously the reformation has to be there. Preparation, but that's not the real business. Or a person who's, you know, sick, and it's important. You have to go through the medical treatment to become healthy, but the most important thing is to become healthy, and then you engage in the whatever your business is when you're healthy. I need some medicine, quick. Is there some water somewhere? The best medicine, water. It's not about just recovering, but it's about, you know, let's say, actual devotional service, unmixed, anukulya Krishna. Anukulya Krishna means that which is pleasing to Krishna, not to me. That will come automatic. That's the pure let stage. This stage is mixed, you know. Well, what pleases me? I only do what I want to do, or I only do it if I get what I want out of it, or something or another. Or, you know, something like whatever, but mixed with something, some of the motivation. The pure devotion of service, anukulina Krishna or Shilam, is ahoitikiya patiyata, it's unmotivated, uninterrupted, pure devotional service. Look at Srila Prabhupada. Under all circumstances, he never, ever, unfailingly, fulfilling the order of his spiritual master to preach this message of Krishna consciousness in this rather, you could say, averse situation, this aggressive world. He never stopped. He was unfailing. His only motivation was to please his spiritual master, please Krishna. It wasn't, oh, this is too much. I don't need to do this. Let me go back to Vrindavan and sit and chant Hare Krishna. To hell with all these people. That was never Prabhupada's mood. I mean, he may have manifested sometimes a little bit of, let's say, indirect seeming like that, just to inspire us to become a bit more serious, but that was never Prabhupada's mood. His mood is always total compassion for all living entities and simply only one-pointed desire to serve his order of his spiritual master as his life and soul. So we have the same opportunity to serve Srila Prabhupada, to do whatever we can to assist in spreading this Krishna consciousness, distributing these transcendental literatures, spreading the holy name, distributing prasadam, somehow or another trying to engage people who are meant to be engaged in Krishna's service in a loving way, in Krishna's service, whatever it is, but somehow or another reconnect. Hare Krishna. Well, we're all over time, but we started a bit late too. So, Hare Krishna, any questions? Ruben G.
At the end of the purport, thank you, very nice class, Maharaj. At the end of the purport, there's a discussion about, you're discussing about Uddhava and Gyan and Gyan Mayi. Could you explain the difference between Gyan and Gyan Mayi, what that means?
Off the top of my head, stage of Gyan and Gyana Mayi Bhakti.
And how that's different from Kevala Bhakti?
I don't know if I can give you an authorized answer to that one. It's a technical point. Gyana and Gyana Mayi, has anyone got any authorized answer to that? Gyana and Gyana Mayi. There obviously is an authorized answer. I don't want to speculate on it. I could speculate, but I don't want to.
And a little bit?
Yes, Prabhu. Mayi?
Mayi is the feminine. Yeah. So, Gyanamayi is a female who is full of knowledge.
Oh, there's an interesting perception. A Gyana is male, and a Gyanamayi is female. Interesting. Anyways, it's not wrong. It's definitely one perception.
The male is Gyanamayi.
Yeah. Like, well, the two words are Gyana and Gyanamayi. That's the two words.
Gyana is wisdom or knowledge.
That's
there. Mayi is a female who has got lot of wisdom.
Okay. Anyway.
Full of wisdom.
Good. Anybody else has got an addition to this? Interesting statement Prabhupada mentions here that Kevala Bhakti is distinct from the stages of Gyan, knowledge, and Gyana Mayi, Bhakti. Well, Gyan is not necessarily Bhakti. Gyan is just knowledge of the phenomena. Gyana Mayi, Bhakti is knowledge, let's say, of distinction between the various levels of, you know, of reverence and Vaikuntha and different levels and so on and so forth in devotional service. Whereas one who's on the Kevala Bhakti doesn't care for all of that either. They have no consideration. They're completely, absolutely absorbed in their particular loving affection for the Lord. Kevala Bhakti is one-pointed. They're not even, you know, directly involved in the other intimate relationships between themselves and Krishna. They're completely absorbed in their own service to Krishna without any consciousness of, I say not consciousness, but any absorption in any of the other rasas with Krishna, generally speaking. So Gyanamayi Bhakti, you may, you know, naturally a devotee has different knowledge of understanding of different stages of bhakti and, you know, reverential bhakti and vairi bhakti and all the different levels within vairi bhakti and so on. But ultimately, we just have to abandon all. Sometimes a devotee gets caught up on a certain level also of devotional service. You know, they think that's it. You know, the rules and regulations are it. You know, or just, you know, just what, like, they're very common. Or a different stage of yoga, they get caught on that different stage. Even though their objective is Krishna, they see that's the limit, so to speak. They don't go any further. They put blockages. Whereas there's no limit to Kevala Bhakti as such. It has no such limitations. What's going on here?
You were talking about Uddhava, and we hear that he's a Gyani Bhakta.
He's mixed. He's not a Gyan. He's mixed with a little bit of Gyan.
What does that mean? Because one side we understand he's a pure devotee.
Yeah.
And he's Krishna's he's dear, more dear friend, to Krishna than himself.
Yeah, pure devotee on that level.
So what is that gyan? Does it mean just Aishwarya and mood of awe and reverence? Or does
a little bit of reverence. He knows that Krishna is the supreme.
Mixed with gyan in a material sense.
That's gyanamayi bhakti, you could say. He knows that he's God. That's another aspect of gyanamayi. You could say gyanamayi bhakti. He knows he's God. He knows he's God. And he thinks that's important. So there's this kind of reverential aspect enters in naturally. Even the queens of Dwarka are slightly mixed with that. Slightly mixed.
But would that be different from the gyan, in the process of gyan?
Yeah, and the process of gyan is obviously is generally means knowledge. It doesn't necessarily mean it's devotion. It's not necessarily mixed with bhakti. It may, bahunam jamanamante gyanavamma prapajate, may lead to bhakti if one gets the association. The four kumaras, Sukadeva Goswami, they're all cited as persons who've got Gyan, but not necessarily Bhakti until they came into contact with Bhakti. And then Bhakti awoke. But even then, they still, at least in the case of the four Kumaras, they remain predominantly Gyanamayi Bhaktis. They're not on that level of this type of Kevala Bhakti. They're fixed. They're perfect. That's their position. There's in the spiritual realm, obviously there's stages like that where the living entities there are completely pure. But that's their position, to serve the Lord in that pure way, in reverence or in service, as such, or as a queen in Dwarka, or in Ayodhya, as a servant, whatever it may be, different levels.
So it's not that Uddhava will ever...
So that's bhakti, where gyan may lead to Brahman. Pure gyan may lead to Brahman. It's predominantly gyan, maybe in touch with some bhakti, but Dhyanamayi bhakti would be predominantly bhakti, but it's mixed with some reverence. Leads to different planes. But Kevala Bhakti alone leads to this level of understanding or this level of pure devotion, unmixed devotional service.
Thank you.
Hare Krishna, Srila Prabhupada ki jai, Kantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki jai, Gaur Premanandi, Hari Hari Bo.